Welcome to the Baltimore Sack Exchange, tackling everything Ravens, including heavy-hitting news, intercepting rumors, and bull-rushing interviews.
What's up, everybody? It is episode 9 of the Baltimore Sack Exchange. That's right, we've made it nearly a full 10 episodes. What we're doing today is we're talking a little bit about the Ravens and the Rams. We're going to go ahead and be talking to Cameron DeSilva from Ramswire. We got an interview with him earlier today, as well as we're going to be talking matchups, expectations, who's going to start, who isn't going to start. Are we going to see any of the starters? How long are they going to play? How long is Lamar Jackson going to play? As well as answering your questions live. So quick shout out to everybody. We didn't have any more Patreon subscribers as of yesterday. We did produce an episode yesterday that kind of went over the Ravens-Bears Hall of Fame game. But if you are a subscriber or a contributor to our Patreon, you get some bonus content. Like I put out the interview with Cameron DeSilva earlier today, shortly after I went ahead and actually recorded it with him. You also would have gotten the live post-show from last night. It was me and Adam Bonacorsi talking a little about Oreos, talking a little about the studs and duds from the Hall of Fame game, and as well as you can get some like extra bonuses in terms of like stickers and stuff like that from the podcast. So if you aren't over there, go ahead and go to patreon.com/Baltimore Sack Exchange. Again, that's patreon.com. Baltimore Sack Exchange. And you can go ahead and contribute as little as a dollar. $2 gets you kind of a lot of the bonuses. A dollar gets you a shout out here on the podcast. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on with the Ravens right now. They had a walkthrough for the game today. So in terms of any new news, there's nothing since yesterday. But yesterday, obviously, there was a lot of stuff that came out. Kenneth Dixon and Max Williams both left the practice early with trainers. Looks like Williams had his ankle rolled upon. And Dixon, they're not entirely sure yet, but my guess it's probably that hamstring injury that's kind of been nagging him. Obviously, Tony Jefferson has been missing practices recently. I believe he's up to 4 straight at this point. With a hamstring injury. Again, Baltimore's just being cautious with their guys. Outside of that, there were a few fights throughout training camp. Nothing crazy, not the Michael Crabtree and Aqib Talib fight that everyone was kind of expecting, but just some roster bubble guys on both sides kind of blocking until the echo of the whistle. And then, whoever they're blocking kind of gets a little annoyed by that. And you see a little bit of a scuffle. So nothing too crazy, all in all, in the news of the Ravens. Certainly, if you want to go ahead and catch all that, you can go ahead and watch or listen to episode 8, in which we kind of talk about the last week in terms of training camp practices. But the reason why you're here, you want to talk about the Rams. You want to talk about the Ravens. You want to talk about week 1 of the preseason. I had gotten a chance to sit down with Cameron DeSilva from Ramswire. To get the kind of inside scoop on what the Rams have going on. Aaron Donald is obviously out. You've got a bunch of new contracts for guys on the defense. Todd Gurley obviously signed a large deal this offseason, one that kind of pissed off Le'Veon Bell from the Pittsburgh Steelers. So, lots of good stuff there. Then when we come back from that, we'll go ahead and talk matchups, expectations, who you're going to see in this game, how often you're going to see them, and then we're going to be taking your questions live. So for those that are just joining us, here is Cameron DeSilva from the Ramswire. Welcome, Cam. I appreciate you coming on, man.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
Excellent, excellent. So we want to go ahead and talk a little bit about the Rams and the Ravens are going to be playing on Thursday night. They've been practicing all week. So some interesting stuff coming up, obviously. Some fist fights, some not fist fights when we kind of expected them. guys holding out, guys getting injured, not playing, all that type of stuff. So let's first talk with kind of the elephant in the room, or the elephant not in the room, as it were, Aaron Donald. Dude's been holding out. I don't necessarily blame him, but why has he been holding out?
Yeah, it really comes down to what they're going to pay him this season. It's something like $6.87 million or something in that range because he's on the fifth-year option. But obviously, he's worth way more than that. The Rams know it. He knows it. His reps know it. So everyone knows that he's worth more than that salary figure, and he's not signed through this season. So it's really a matter of him just getting what he deserves. He wants to be the highest paid defensive player in the league. He deserves to be paid that. Von Miller, he got his big deal a few years ago. Dominican Sue, who the Rams just signed, got $114 million from the Dolphins 3 years ago. So he wants something in that range. Some are saying he wants quarterback money. I don't know exactly what tier of quarterback money he wants. But he's not wavering on this. He skipped yesterday's deadline to become an unrestricted free agent after the season. And really, the Rams hold all the cards because of that franchise tag.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It seems that Donald doesn't really so much care about the restricted, unrestricted thing. He's going, I'm going to sit regardless of what happens until I get the contract that I want. So you can keep me in town another year. That's fine. You're not going to have me play.
Right, yeah, it really, honestly, it doesn't make a difference because he knows that franchise tag is coming. I don't think the Rams wouldn't risk just placing a first-round tender on him anyway. They're going to go with the tag, pay him X amount of dollars. I'm not sure what the figure is going to be next season, but it's still going to be below his market value because he was a defensive player of the year last season. He's one of the most dominant guys in the league, regardless of position. And even the franchise tag isn't going to give him what he deserves. And that's really just a 1 year thing.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, you mentioned they've brought in a bunch of defensive talent this year. You know, the Rams are kind of setting themselves up as a really good defense, which we'll talk about in a minute, but they don't seem interested in paying Aaron Donald the type of money that, let's be honest, defensive stars make. You have a defensive star. It seems weird to go ahead and spend a bunch of money elsewhere, but then not pay your own homegrown talent. I mean, is it just a matter of, do you get the impression that the Rams or that Aaron Donald is just asking for way too much and there's no way that that's ever going to happen, at least, you know, not with a team like the Rams who kind of have a shorter window to get to that Super Bowl and are trying to get there? Or is it just a matter of they're just being asses about it and don't necessarily want to pony up the extra, maybe mil or two difference that they're at?
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of both. Whether Donald is asking for way too much, I don't know if it's $25 million, $21 million, regardless of whatever it is. I'm not sure what the number comes down to, but I have a feeling that these negotiations are coming down to guaranteed money. Maybe he wants to hit a certain percentage of the salary cap. Because when you do look at it, as guys were signing these deals a few years ago, the salary cap was lower and they were still getting, like Dominican Sue, getting $114 million and representing a larger percentage of the salary cap than, say, Aaron Donald would this year with a $20 million contract per year. So maybe it comes down to that. The Rams, it is, like you said, it's interesting to see them pay a guy like Brandon Cooks who hasn't played a snap for them. They go out and pay Todd Gurley 2 years before they really had to. Dominican Sue comes in for $14 million for this season. So they're not afraid to pony up the cash. Maybe that's their way of saying, hey, look, Aaron, we're not afraid to pay guys. We want to take care of our players. Let's kind of meet a middle ground here. But their reluctance to pay him it's gone on for two off seasons now, and they still won't flinch. So I'm not really sure when this is going to end.
Well, you know, one of the things that obviously has been talked about, I mean, in our Slack channel as editors is, when's Aaron Donald going to get traded? It's kind of a weird thing of, like, is Mac or Donald going to be the first guy to go? I mean, what's the likelihood of that actually happening at this point?
I haven't heard any whispers really from reporters or anything like that suggesting Donald could be traded. I don't really see it happening. But you look at their roster, they do have good players up front. They have Michael Brockers, they have Dominican Sue. So it's not that losing Donald would, or it's not that Donald is replaceable, but say they did entertain offers and they could swoop in and grab two or three first round picks and maybe a linebacker that they need or something like that. I think that they might be open to it, but I don't think it's really going to happen. I think they know what kind of transcendent talent he is. He's almost a lock for a future Hall of Famer at this point in his career with all the accolades and stats and just sheer dominance that he's put on the field. So I don't think they would willingly just trade him to another team for a few draft picks where you don't know what you're going to get. You look at the Saints last year or in this past draft, they traded two first round picks or used two first round picks to get a guy like Marcus Davenport. So really, you look at the value that they're going to get, and most likely they're not going to get what they should for a player of his caliber.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think that's fair. You know, the Ravens have been no strangers to bad draft picks in recent years themselves, and giving up a guy that you know is good for an unknown is always a shaky right. proposition, unless, you know, a deal isn't going to happen. You know, either Donald wants $25 million and you're at, you know, 16. That's one of those types of deals. Then you go, all right, fine, let's get rid of him. Let's at least get something out of him.
I don't really see them trading him, but if they could deal him to a team where they know they're going to have a bad record, they're going to have a couple of early picks in the next couple of years, then maybe you go out and get a guy like Ed Oliver in the draft. But there's just too much uncertainty with the draft and with those picks, whereas Donald, you know what you're going to get every year. He's going to be a defensive player of the year candidate, and he's going to approach double digit sacks, if not passing, every year.
Yeah. You know, even without Donald, this defense appears to be set up for, you know, the tops in the league. I mean, Baltimore is another team that a lot of people are kind of expecting big things out of defensively. But as we kind of mentioned before, the Rams have had no problem dropping payloads of money off to guys in the last offseason or two in an effort to try to get to that point. You know, is that kind of the feeling and expectation for fans? Is it, you know, top in the league or bust? Or is it a situation in which, you know, Rams fans are going to be happy for anything in the top five?
I think anything in the top five would be good. They were a really bad run defending team last season. They got gashed a lot. They gave up a lot of big runs. And really that came down to gap discipline and really just fitting into Wade Phillips' scheme in a 3-4, which Alec Ogletree did not. And that's why they traded him just a few months after giving him a long-term extension. So I think once they kind of bring in those new linebackers, they got rid of Robert Quinn and Connor Barwin and Ogletree, like I mentioned, they're getting younger. They're getting guys who are more, a little bit more fresh when they come onto the field, rather than having those old legs and not necessarily that burst. But really the questions on defense come down to the pass rush with their edge rushers. You're going to have two guys who you may or may not have heard of in Samson Ebukam and Matt Longacre starting most likely. So that just kind of shows what kind of experience they have at that position. And then inside it's Mark Barron. He has to stay healthy. He's still recovering from a few injuries last season. So there are questions on the defense, really where their strengths are up front with the defensive line and then in the back half with the secondary.
Yeah. I mean, it's been kind of a team that I've watched a lot this offseason and just going like, either they're fighting so hard to get into that Super Bowl and try to make such an explosive defense while shoring up some of their holes. You know, it's been kind of scary to think of what this team's going to look like maybe in a few years when all of that cap money kind of hits at one time and then you have to give Goff a bigger contract and so on and so forth. But you know, just to kind of go over some of the moves that they've made this offseason. Marcus Peters, Aqib Talib, Sam Shields, Sue. You know, obviously if they can lock Aaron Donald up for a long term deal, that would be amazing. You know, that's some of the better talent in this league across the board. I mean, Marcus Peters, everyone was going crazy for him a few years ago. Aqib Talib, we've seen him in practice this week. He's done a good job of shutting down Michael Crabtree, and still, even though he's at the back end of his career, I think, and a bit of a hothead, the dude's still really good at what he does. And then you've got Sue. When he's not suspended for games for stepping on people, the guy is one of the best defensive linemen in the league, which has been obvious given his contract status over the past couple of years. So, really kind of scary looking defense from the outside, man.
Yeah, it's a defense that's built for today's NFL. They're going to have athletic linebackers. Mark Barron's a little bit undersized for the position, but he's a guy who's all over the field. He's got good speed. Corey Littleton, who's going to probably take over for Alec Ogletree, another similar player with good athleticism. And they're built up front to where they're going to put pressure on the quarterback from the interior and kind of rush the quarterback that way, and then force them into mistakes in a secondary that's filled with ball hawks. Like you mentioned, Peters, Talib, those guys, just even though they freelance a little bit in the secondary, when they're in zone defense and they keep their eyes on the quarterback, they leave their man and really just make great breaks on the ball. And even the safeties don't get talked about much with Joyner and John Johnson. They had 1 year experience starting together last season. They both could have easily been Pro Bowlers. So really from top to bottom, this defense is stacked with talent. And I think it's only going to get better this season with Wade Phillips and another year with the Rams and bringing in talent that he knows fits his system.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, for those that maybe haven't followed Wade Phillips' career, I mean, the guy was a mediocre head coach, but has been fantastic as a defensive coordinator, both with the Broncos and then now with the Rams. You know, after his head coaching days, the guy has routinely put up top five defenses, been creative in how he does it, certainly has the players on his side every single time. You know, guys are talking about Wade Phillips. They always speak very highly of him. And then an entertaining guy on Twitter, from what I gather.
Yeah. Phillips he's not just a great coach on the sideline. He's awesome on Twitter. He engages with fans. He's relatable with things like Fortnite. Like, he showed up to after practice one day with a Fortnite t-shirt from his grandson, and just things like that to relate to the players, even given his age. It's really an interesting dynamic with him being, I think, 71, and then Sean McVay is 32 years old. So there's a mix of experience and youth, and they both really just get the most out of their players. Whether it's on offense or defense, guys just buy into the system, and they really know what the coaches expect, and they're willing to work for them. So it's a really good situation right now in Los Angeles for the Rams.
Yeah. It certainly seems that way, like I said, from the outside. So we have Cam Da Silva. You could follow him on Twitter at Cam Da Silva. CamDaSilva. He's the managing editor of the Rams Wire and a great all-around guy. Let's go ahead and talk a little about injuries. You know, Baltimore has been weirdly, and I'm going to knock on wood for all the Ravens fans listening right now, have been weirdly good about injuries so far in this offseason. I know the Rams are kind of battling some minor things, but is there anything that is kind of standing out, players that are maybe missing throughout training camp so far that are expected to do big things?
Just a couple of them that popped up recently. Gerald Everett, their second year tight end. He was their second round pick last year. He has a little bit of a shoulder issue. I think they called it a sprain. Sean McVay said he's a little bit worried about it because they don't know exactly the nature of it. He's back in LA rehabbing and kind of recovering from that. So he's obviously not going to play against the Ravens. And then Matt Longacre, who's one of their projected starting outside linebackers, has another injury. I think it's his biceps. He's, again, that's something that Sean McVay said he's a little bit concerned about. They're still trying to figure out what it is and how severe it is. So he's also back in LA. Other than that, they've stayed relatively healthy. LaMarcus Joyner has a sore Achilles. I'm not sure if he was out there at practice, but I'm sure they're going to hold him out this week against the Ravens. But I'd really expect most of the starters to sit with four preseason games after a couple days of practice against the Ravens and really getting to go against another team rather than just their own. I think Sean McVay is going to keep a lot of his starters out. But as far as injuries, it really just those few that are concerning right now for the Rams.
Yeah, I mean, the Ravens have kind of been in the same boat, and I know a lot of fans are hungry to see the starters, but especially after, technically speaking, already playing a preseason game in the Hall of Fame game against the Chicago Bears, a lot of fans are kind of excited thinking it's the second preseason game, but in a lot of ways, Baltimore's still going with that. It's the first game. You're probably still not going to see a lot of the starters for Baltimore. Maybe Joe Flacco for maybe a series, but even that would probably be a bit of a stretch for that matter. But yeah, you know, injuries everywhere, and everyone seems to be, you know, we're in a new version of the NFL where a major injury to any single unit can completely derail a season. So for a lot of these expected starters, you know, if you've got a little bump and bruise, I'm going to hold you out, man, until I absolutely need you. These games don't matter.
Yeah, yeah. This is the point of the offseason where coaches and trainers and all the staffs across the league are really going to be careful with their guys. If you have a little bit of a hamstring strain, just sit out and take it easy and wait until the regular season starts. And rather than risking further injury and putting yourself on the shelf for even longer than you need to be. So I think it's smart to just really take it slow. We've seen how many injuries have already occurred in training camp and practice, whether it's with the Chargers or any other teams. So right now it's just a matter of taking it slow and just easing into the season.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then, you know, I think we saw yesterday was the final day of the Rams and Ravens really practicing together. Today they have a walkthrough, and then obviously tomorrow is the game. But yesterday it seemed like the Ravens and the Rams were kind of holding some of their guys back. Maybe, you know, you get them a few series or a few snaps and then kind of just set them on the sideline. Your starters know what to do. You brought them in for a reason, or they've been around this league long enough. Chances are they don't really need a ton of reps in order to get themselves ready. It's just knocking off some of the rust. So, yeah, which is really exactly what the third
what
game
it's
is for.
Come down to.
Yeah. So, you know, speaking of starters, where's Jared Goff at this point in his career? I mean, Baltimore kind of has a history of really good defenses and quarterbacks that just don't screw up. Is that kind of where Goff is at this point?
Yeah, he did a good job last season, where he had a good offensive coach in Sean McVay. He had a great offensive line, running back, obviously Todd Gurley, offensive player of the year. So he had a really strong supporting cast around him. And that's not to take away anything that he did last year. He had 28 touchdowns, 7 picks. Those aren't numbers that you just put up thanks to a system. But he's really a player who is not going to, he didn't lose any games for the Rams. He didn't really make any colossal mistakes, but one of the knocks on him is that he didn't really win any games for them. They blew a lot of teams out. He didn't really have to come from behind and lead them down the field in a fourth quarter comeback to win. He had a chance to do that against the Seahawks. He kind of failed in that regard, but he didn't make any game change. He didn't throw 4 interceptions in a game to lose it for the Rams. But he also didn't really carry them in any particular game. He handed the ball to Todd Gurley, got it to him on screens and checkdowns, hit his open receivers that seemed like they were almost always open. I think he threw into tighter windows fewer than any other quarterback. So he's someone who's not going to make the big mistake, and he's going to keep the team in the game. And with a hopefully improved defense, that's good news for the Rams.
Yeah, I mean, looking at his stats from last year, 3,800 yards, 28 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. You know, all in all, that's the epitome of just don't screw it up football, but then managing to go ahead and still stack a lot of touchdowns on top of things, which is fantastic. But, you know, with the defense that you have, with the obviously Gurley as a running back, with a good offensive line, you know, hopefully Goff isn't put into a situation in which he needs to come back and win games or toss 4 touchdowns in a game in order to go ahead and win. You know, but it certainly seems like he's in his third year now. So, you know, hopefully that's the time when quarterbacks really start to kind of shine. The game slows down enough for him and they start seeing things. It's a little bit like the Matrix in that regard.
Yeah, that third year leap is something that I think the Rams are really hoping for from Goff. Not that he wasn't good last year, but they're hoping to see really 35 touchdowns or 30 plus touchdowns, and really just taking command of the offense and being that real true franchise quarterback who can carry a team rather than just someone who is going to hand the ball off, hit his open receivers, and just do what's necessary in the third and fourth quarter to hold on to a lead. They want someone who, when it comes down to the postseason and you're behind, you need to come back. They want him to be that guy. So hopefully that's what we see from him this season.
I mean, do you really think this is a Super Bowl caliber team at this point? I mean, just your feeling of the team, having obviously seen him and what the roster looks like, is this a team that should be fighting for a Super Bowl this year?
Oh, yeah. Yep. 100%. The Seahawks are really crumbling a little bit in the NFC West. The 49ers, we still don't know exactly what we're going to get. There are high expectations with Garoppolo and such. But and then the Cardinals have a lot of questions, too. So just given that, the Rams should have a really good chance to make the playoffs. They faltered against the Falcons last year when they did make the postseason. But another year of experience, another year of Jared Goff and Sean McVay's system. And then they added pieces on defense to really improve. They made some necessary changes there, whether it's at the inside or outside linebacker position, getting rid of Trumaine Johnson and Kayvon Webster for Marcus Peters and Tlaib. So they made a lot of positive changes this season, to the point where they are honestly one of the contenders for a Super Bowl, as long as Jared Goff can hold it together and put together a nice season.
Excellent, excellent. Well, you know, hopefully it's the Rams and Ravens in the Super Bowl. That'd be great.
That would be fun. That would be fun.
Two really good defenses, a young quarterback, an older quarterback, you know, kind of both sitting in a, you know, Flacco's been in that spot that Goff's been in. And hopefully if it is Ravens Rams, hopefully Goff doesn't get the same level of, success that Flacco had. You know, let's talk a little about this game. You know, it's the preseason. Obviously it's the first preseason game for the Rams. It's the second now for the Ravens, but a lot of what preseason and training camp is checking out the young guys, checking out the unknowns, the undrafted free agents, the guys who, you know, maybe were a fourth round pick 3 years ago and are starting to kind of come into their own now. You know, who's an unknown guy that the Ravens fans should be watching out for in this game?
Depending on what they do at quarterback, I'm not exactly sure. The Rams have Sean Mannion, Brandon Allen, and Luis Perez at quarterback. I'm not sure who's going to play the most, but Luis Perez is someone I'm interested in watching just because I'm not completely sold on Sean Mannion as Goff's backup. He came from a Division II school. He had a really good season last year from Texas A&M Commerce, and he's really a lesser-known guy. He went undrafted, but Perez is someone with a good, strong arm. I think if he impresses in the preseason, he could potentially overtake Mannion. Sean McVay seems to be a fan of Sean's game, but I'm not sold on him. So I'm interested to see what Perez can do. Brandon Allen, we kind of know what we're going to get from him. He's just an average quarterback who's possibly going to be the number three guy on the roster. But I'm interested to see Luis Perez play a quarterback. And then on the defensive side of the ball, Troy Hill is probably their number four, number five cornerback. But he had a really good end of the season last year where he played against the Falcons in the playoffs. I think he had the single highest graded game from Pro Football Focus of the postseason for a corner. So he's someone who can really make a strong impression, possibly be a trade chip because the Rams are so deep at that position. So I'm curious to see how he's going to look in this one too.
Yeah, I mean, Ravens fans will remember from the last game on Thursday night, you know, the backup secondary did not fare all that well. They had a bunch of missed tackles. They just kind of looked like they were a little bit confused on where they were supposed to be. So, you know, Perez will certainly, if Baltimore plays the way they did in the, you know, second half of that game on Thursday, Perez should have a pretty good showing all in all. I think what Chase Daniel put up like 187 yards throwing essentially to one guy.
Yeah. So I'll be interested to see what he does. Really in these preseason games, getting to full speed and tackling and really getting into the groove of a real NFL game again is that's the tough part for the defense. So if the Rams can stay on the same page offensively, hopefully they put together some solid plays and drives.
Well, obviously with the Rams bringing in, you know, kind of all the talent they have, you know, Baltimore's kind of in the same boat in a few different areas, but are there any really good players, you know, starter quality players you think could make it on another team that are going to get cut from this Rams squad?
One guy that I think player or people should keep an eye on from the Rams is Dominique Easley. He's been on the PUP list all off season throughout training camp so far. He tore his ACL again last year, so he's still recovering from that, but the Rams extended him for 1 year this offseason when he hit free agency. He's a guy who I'm not sure if he's going to be able to make the team just because he's not available. So if the Rams kind of lose their patience with him and his inability to stay on the field. He's someone who I could see being possibly a surprise cut. As far as any other players, it's hard to say. Their wide receivers are really set right now with Cooks, Kupp, and Woods. Josh Reynolds was one of their draft picks last year. He's a guy who I think is going to stick on the roster. But then you have Mike Thomas, who he was suspended for the first couple games last season. He has good speed. He's a guy who I could possibly see being released before the cuts happen. And really, he's a nice piece if a team is looking for a number four receiver who can really stretch the field and take the top off of a defense. So those are a couple guys that I'd be looking for as possibly surprise cuts who can actually play.
Excellent, excellent. You know, the Ravens have a lot of depth at cornerback and on the defensive line, and we kind of saw that last year with them. They traded Timmy Jernigan to the Eagles simply because it was either he was going to get cut and you get nothing for him, or, you know, you maybe hopefully try to move up in the round. I think they traded third-round picks in exchange for Jernigan last year. So, you know, I'd figure with the Rams having all the type of defensive talent they do on that defensive line, you know, maybe somebody there is good enough that'll end up getting either cut or traded. And after Baltimore got a chance to see everybody for a week, maybe there's a guy that they had an eye on, and you know, maybe you see something happen as the 53-man roster starts getting set.
Yeah. That's definitely a good point with them having the joint practices and then the preseason games. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Ravens did kind of keep an eye on some of the guys they saw in practice.
Yeah. So, you know, what do you kind of, these games are never necessarily about wins and losses, but, you know, who do you see actually winning in this? I mean, is it going to be a blowout game in which the Rams, just the depth across the board, should be able to kind of dominate the Ravens? You know, they've done it in practice so far this week, generally speaking. You know, do you expect the Rams to kind of win this game and walk into their second week of a preseason kind of with that confidence, or is this going to be a tight game?
I think it'll probably be close. The Ravens obviously have a good defense, the Rams too. They have some good depth, like I said, on the defensive line and at the cornerback position. So that could make life a little bit difficult for guys like RG3 and LaMarcus Jackson, if however much they do play. But I think it'll be relatively close. None of these games really, you're going to see a team put the gas pedal down and blow out the other team. But the Rams do have really good depth across the board from the running back position, wide receiver, their quarterbacks, who knows what they're going to do with them, how much each one is going to play. Perez, like I said, is really inexperienced, but I do think the Rams have a good chance to win this game.
And just a quick follow-up to that is the season predictions. Obviously, the NFC West, we talked about, you know, not necessarily the scariest division in football right now, as a bunch of teams are kind of rebuilding. Where do the Rams kind of finish? I mean, what's their final record in this year?
I think the floor for them should be 10 wins. Anything less than that would be a disappointment, in my opinion. Their ceiling, I would say, is probably 13, 14 wins. That'd be viewed as a really good season. Their schedule is a little bit tough, especially in kind of that middle part where they're on the road for a few games. They have the Mexico City game against Kansas City. So there is a tough little stretch there of games, but I could see them easily winning 12, 13 games and not necessarily running away with the NFC West, but winning it by two or three games. So I do have high expectations for them. It's just going to come down to what they can do in the postseason with such a young quarterback and a young head coach too.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you, Cam. You can go ahead and catch Cam both on theramswire.usatoday.com. You can also catch Cam on Twitter at Cam Da Silva, CamDaSilva. Yeah, thanks, Cam, and I appreciate you coming on and talking about the Rams and Ravens for me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, man. It was good talking about it, and Excellent. Hopefully we get a competitive game tomorrow night.
That's my hope, man. That's my hope. You know, it's always about these young kids and seeing what they do and seeing who's able to go ahead and show up. And the Ravens had some guys show up in the last game. It'll be interesting to see if they can do it 2 weeks in a row. But yeah, I appreciate it, man. It was good talking to you.
So, yeah, we got a chance to sit down with Cam and talk a little bit about the Rams, which was great. Real knowledgeable dude, obviously, as you could hear. We're going to be taking questions here shortly, so anybody who has any questions about this matchup, you know, please go ahead and reach out here in the comment section if you're listening live. If you're not, make sure you listen live. We do these throughout the preseason, Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 7 p.m. here on the Facebook Ravens Wire. So facebook.com/Ravens Wire. You can go ahead and catch us Tuesdays and Wednesdays, going ahead and doing the previews on Wednesdays and the recaps on Tuesdays. So those that are here, go ahead and start asking questions live. I'll try to go ahead and take them. For those that are looking to watch the game, you can go ahead and catch it tomorrow, August 9th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's here in Baltimore. You can go ahead and get a live streamed version of it if you go to our website, which is ravenswire.usatoday.com. You go ahead and click on the Ravens vs. Rams preseason week one, time, TV schedule, and how to watch. We have a link for Fubo TV, F-U-B-O TV, that will give you a free trial to go ahead and watch it if you're in the area. Otherwise, television channels, you got WBAL, WJLA, WGAL, WFXR, WWCW for Roanoke, Virginia, WMDT, Delmarva area, and Honolulu, Hawaii is getting it, KFVE. Jerry Sandusky, Brian Billick, and Evan Washburn are going to be your broadcasters, and of course, you can always catch it on the radio, WBAL 1090 AM and 98 Rock 97.9 FM. For those that are going to be watching the game, you know, one of the biggest things to kind of going into this game, one of the questions that I've heard the most has been, how long are we going to see the starters? Which we touched a little bit with Cam. How long are we going to see those starters? And then how long, more importantly, are we going to see Lamar Jackson, and where in the game is he going to play? Personally, I am of the belief that these starters are going to play limited snaps still. It's still the first preseason game. While it's the second for the Ravens, they're kind of treating that as an extra one. They just got a chance to see their depth guys. They got a chance to see their rookies. From here on out, it's normal preseason. And in the first game, the starters, the veterans, typically don't play a ton. That being said, is Lamar Jackson's kind of the big treat for everybody. That's the guy that everyone is watching to see exactly how he does. Jackson, I think they will probably try to push him up instead of playing the final two quarters. I see them trying to maybe dip him into the second quarter a little bit, seeing if he can't play against some of the Rams' borderline starters, but then also, more importantly, kind of getting his feet wet with some of Baltimore's better guys. They did him no favors last Thursday against the Chicago Bears. They kind of ruined his debut to a certain degree, as I talked about with Adam Bonacorsi yesterday in episode 8. They kind of ruined his debut a little bit by putting him in an offensive line that couldn't block anybody, by not giving him a decent running back to kind of hand the ball off to. And then, of course, he was playing with a bunch of scrubs in terms of the wide receiver core. So we never got a chance to actually see really what Lamar can do with a starting lineup. Obviously, we're probably not going to get that throughout the entire preseason because he's not a starter, but it will be interesting to kind of see, you know, what can Lamar do with maybe throwing to Willie Snead, maybe Chris Moore, versus throwing to guys like Tim White and Janarian Grant and, you know, Devier Posey and stuff like that. So don't be too shocked if they maybe try to push him up the lineup a little bit just to see what he can do with some, you know, better players around him in order to go ahead and see his development, especially when it comes to things like stepping up into the pocket, looking downfield, kind of having that throw first, run second approach that he really needs to have in order to make it in this league to that extent. Outside of that, you know, we probably won't see anybody who's had any injuries at all. So, you know, Tony Jefferson undoubtedly out. Marshall Yanda, they've already confirmed he's out for this game. But, you know, Tyus Bowser, I know he kind of had some bumps and bruises recently. Don't be too shocked again if he's not out there, because
there's no point in getting your guys who are already bumped and bruised and a little injured, more injured, because they're playing kind of hurt, especially the guys that you don't need to see, your starters primarily. So don't be terribly shocked if anybody who's been on the injury list recently is not in this game. They don't even bother suiting up. It's just the Ravens have been very cautious about their injuries this year, especially with the extended time through training camp and the extra preseason game. They're not going to do anything to jeopardize their health. We've got a few questions here. James Shepard here. What player offense and defense do you see balling out tomorrow? You know, offensively, I'm hoping for one of the running backs to go ahead and do it. I'll be honest, I don't necessarily have a guy that I have balling out. I hope it's one of the running backs. Gus Edwards, he was not dreadful in the first game. And he's the guy that probably has the best chance of making something happen, especially with Kenneth Dixon being out and injured with that hamstring injury. It appears to be a hamstring injury yet again. He missed yesterday's practice, went off the field a little early with trainers. So there's probably a pretty good chance that Kenneth Dixon doesn't play in another preseason game. If that's the case, you know, the running backs have the door wide open for him, honestly. At this point, as much as I know fans want to see Kenneth Dixon do well, and they think he can do well, the guy's injured that often to where if another running back can make a big game against a pretty tough Rams defense, even, you know, the second, third, and fourth stringers, that's a guy that will suddenly start getting some more reps both in practice and in preseason games. So, you know, Gus Edwards, keep an eye out on him. For the wide receivers, Tim White did fairly well on Thursday. Again, slightly limited snaps. I want to see a little bit more out of him. Janarian Grant returned a punt yesterday, got flagged for taunting, and then ultimately yelled at by special teams coach Jerry Rosberg, as well as Albert McClellan and Harbaugh. But, you know, it kind of shows the explosive ability he has as a player that hopefully he's able to go ahead and translate into games. So there's a few offensive players. A lot of those guys tend to be, you know, the skill positions for me that I'm paying a lot of attention to. But the offensive line also, you know, when you see guys coming in, hopefully you don't see guys coming in from the second and third and fourth string offensive line. Hopefully you see them kind of be able to stack up well against the Rams front seven, which is as formidable as it gets in this league, in my opinion. You know, but keep an eye on those guys as well on offense and see who's kind of getting their guy consistently and more importantly, who's not getting their guy consistently. And hopefully somebody's able to show up on that offensive line and give Baltimore a little bit more hope for their depth there. On defense, you know, we're going to talk about him in just a second. Terrence Green actually mentions him. Kamale Correa, he's a guy who showed up big time in that first game. I want to see him do it a second week in a row. John Harbaugh has been very, very big throughout his tenure here at Baltimore of stacking practices, stacking games, stacking plays on top of one another. You know, a good effort is not a good thing if it's by itself. You need to go ahead and add those things up until you get a good game, and then add that game up to a good preseason, and add that preseason up to a good season. Correa needs to go ahead and still show up in a big way. And I think he knows that. I think, you know, if what we saw last week is any indication of where he's actually at and not just the Bears being the Bears, but if Correa is actually there or anywhere close to that point, you know, we'll see him make a big impact. I also see Tim Williams doing well. You know, the guy did really well against the Rams this week in practice. You know, as a matter of fact, Don Martindale said, quote unquote, Tim Williams becoming the player we thought he was going to be. That's a lot of what you want to hear out of that guy. You know, he was even able to go ahead and beat some of the impressive guys on the Rams offensive line. And again, you know, as Cameron DeSilva mentioned, the Rams have really good guys in the trenches. So hearing about Tim Williams being able to beat those guys in practice is a big thing for him. So again, look out for him as well come tomorrow night. Terrence Green, you mentioned, how does Correa make this team? I think that is an accurate and impressive question
I think it's one of those things that Correa, again, like I mentioned, he needs to stack these games. A singular effort, while it's great and I'm happy for him, and he did a lot in the last week, I need to see him continuously making those types of plays. You know, he's now, what, in his third year? Third year is when guys either really start to kind of separate themselves or, you know, like Garnett mentioned earlier in terms of Jared Goff, this is generally speaking the type of player you're going to be for the rest of your career. Either you start to show up or you don't. And if Correa doesn't, then we kind of know where he's going to be at. Based on last week, I can see Correa making this team almost solely based on that. Baltimore does not like to give up on their guys, especially draft picks, especially guys that they have big things for. Correa kind of fits into that mold very, very nicely. We see it with Breshad Perriman currently. It's a guy that probably shouldn't be on this team, but yet somehow still is and is getting massive amounts of snaps in order to go ahead and continue to prove himself. Correa is very much in line for that type of stuff. And with a big showing last week, there's something they can still hang their hat on and say, this is a guy that we can knows can do things. We know he's capable, but you know he's just not consistent with it, and they're going to continue to hang their hat on that. Terrence Green also with the question, what does the return of Waller mean to this tight end group? I'll be honest, I don't think it really means anything. You've drafted two guys this offseason. You've already admitted that your tight end group is not where you want it to be in any way, shape, or form. You don't draft two guys when at most you're going to put two tight ends out on the field. You don't go ahead and draft two guys to be at the bottom of your depth chart. It's certainly not if you go ahead and spend a first and a third or a first and a fourth on them. I think it was a third. Yeah, Mark Andrews is a third. You don't go ahead and spend that type of draft equity to have those guys sit on the back end of this roster. Hayden Hurst, I kind of see being the top guy. And then it's an amalgamation of Mark Andrews, Nick Boyle, and Max Williams. Darren Waller, having been suspended, is not positive for him. Obviously, he missed a lot of football. Hasn't really been on this practice field. Being suspended is kind of unlike being injured in the fact that you can't be with the team at all. They don't want you near the facility, that type of thing, just from an NFL rules standpoint. So Waller either has been working out all on his own by himself, or he hasn't been. Either way, he's not going to be in prime football shape. He's not going to know the playbook. He's not going to be acclimated with the guys around him. He has a steep climb just to get to the point where really you're going to feel comfortable with him practicing, because you don't want to set a guy out there that doesn't know what's going on to try to run routes. He's going to run into people. He's going to trip guys over. He's just not going to be where you want him to be. And ultimately someone gets hurt that way. So Waller, even now, I'll be honest, I'm kind of surprised they brought him back at all. The guy was kind of a borderline roster bubble guy, off the roster completely. Last year, kind of weirdly got saved by being suspended and kept on the team because he wasn't counting against it as a roster spot. They were hoping to continue developing him, but I mean, at this point, that's got to be concerning that you can't even put him on the practice field as of right this minute. Long term, I don't think Waller makes his team. I don't think that's a hot take by any stretch of the imagination. And short term, you know, he's got a battle just to get back to the practice field at this point, in which then he has to show up on top of that, and he's still learning tight end. It's just there's such an uphill climb for Waller at this point. Maybe let me look him up real quick. He might be up for a practice squad, but I kind of doubt that too. Let's see how many accumulated years he has. NFL.com version. This is his third season, so he can still, technically speaking, be put on the practice squad, which is if Baltimore wants to continue developing him, that's where he's going to go. He's not going to make this roster spot. I can't see Baltimore keeping five tight ends and then Waller being that tight end that they keep on the fifth side. Even if they do it, it's not probable for that to happen. So, all in all, I'm I'm not terribly impressed with what Waller's done, and he has to really go ahead and impress from here on out and do so quickly in order to kind of climb back up to where he needs to be. Outside of those questions, this is actually going to be kind of a short one today. Obviously, I don't have Chibs here with me. I don't have Adam Bonacorsi, who was our special guest yesterday. This is just a quick preview. You guys kind of already know what to expect. It's the Ravens and the Rams tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's going to be a lot of the same that we saw in the first game, guys. It's going to be a lot of depth, guys. Don't get your hopes up. Don't expect a huge game. Take everything that you see kind of with a grain of salt until you start seeing guys stack those things up on top of each other. And if you're watching for Lamar Jackson, you know, watch to see how his footwork is. Watch to see how, does he step into throws properly? Does he continue to kind of short step, especially if there's pressure? And does he keep his eyes downfield versus maybe looking at that pressure coming in and looking to run? Those are the big mistakes that rookie quarterbacks make, and especially rookie mobile quarterbacks. So keep an eye on that for Lamar Jackson and everybody else. You know, they'll separate themselves by making big plays at this point. So we'll see you guys Tuesday, 7 p.m. It's going to be, should be Chibs and myself again, now that he should be done moving by that point. Thanks very much. And again, make sure that you go ahead and contribute to patreon.com/BaltimoreSackExchange. And make sure you follow us here on Facebook in order to see all these live shows, facebook.com/RavensWire. You can also catch us, this downloaded episode podcast version will be on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, pretty much everywhere else you could possibly go ahead and get access to it. And on top of all of that, folks, we now have the SportsWire mobile application. This episode will be up tomorrow morning on our website, and then the SportsWire mobile application if you click on the RavensWire. So thank you guys very, very much, and have a wonderful night. Go Ravens.